These are the stories that you need to know about today. That's crazy, right? Those are the scenes in Italy. The people are increasingly angry, and they've repeatedly said so in violent confrontations like those. Much of the same is taking place, by the way, in the United States. Is Germany going to reach out to Putin and say, "We're so sorry. Can we be friends again, please, for the sake of the German economy?" And fresh off his interview with Tucker Carlson, Peter Schiff joins me here to talk about the sad state of the dollar, why gold is soaring. Also, he's going to react to a story that just came out of China, where China is going to compete with the U.S. dollar. This is really, really important, and he's the right guy to ask. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and welcome to The Effect. There are some very impactful videos that I'm going to show you in just a bit, and I want to share them with you because one of the reasons that these videos are so important is because of what it says about the leaders who run these countries, these Western countries, like my own, by the way, where some of this takes place. The point is this: polls consistently confirm what I'm about to tell you, and the videos, like the ones that I'm about to show you, drive the point home even further, even more so. So what am I talking about? Here is the point. The majority of the people who live in Western countries literally hate their governments and hate their leaders. That's a fact. Not my opinion. It's a fact. I can show it to you. So now you got to ask yourself, if the people in these countries, and I'm talking about places like France and the UK and Germany and, you know, Spain, hate their leaders, then what gives those leaders to go all over the world bragging and thumping their chests, talking about their so-called democracies, right? How can you say you're a great democracy if your own citizens hate you, right? So why are you representing them? And what the hell gives you the right then to intervene in the affairs of other countries constantly? And with that said, let me show you Italy, one of the so-called great democracies. Watch. No, it's not 4th of July. So this is nuts, right? The demonstrations, this is in Turin. They turned into riots. Look at this, right? This is hate. What else are you going to call it? Those people are hateful. They're angry. They're angry about a lot of things, but most of all, they're angry apparently because the Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, shut down their center that they use for culture and activism. According to the reports, protesters as well as police officers have been injured and hospitalized as the clashes have continued through the night, with both sides hurling tear gas and canisters and rocks and stones and whatever else they can find. Look at this. Meloni apparently is blaming the protesters, and the protesters are blaming the Meloni government. By the way, according to the most recent polls, 56% of Italians disapprove of their prime minister. That means more than 50% of the people who live in that country don't want her, right? And by the way, those are great numbers, fantastic numbers, compared to the numbers that I've seen in places like France, you know, with Macron, and in the UK with Starmer. They have like 12%, 16%, 19%. But you know what? Meloni's numbers, if it's where it was, 56% don't like her, is horrible compared to places like Russia and China, interestingly enough. What does that tell you about the world? By the way, there are other protests in Italy regarding Israel's actions in Gaza. The U.S.'s actions regarding ICE is being protested in Italy as well. And speaking of the U.S., I guess let's look at the latest protests there, coming out again in cities all over the country. But of course, the main focus is Minneapolis. This is everywhere. Thousands upon thousands have been marching throughout the weekend with coordinated walkouts and strikes and rallies throughout different parts of the U.S. The largest protests took place in Minnesota, Oregon, New York, and California, mostly Los Angeles, where citizens kicked off something they called the boycott on ICE. They say no work, no school, no shopping until ICE stops doing what it's doing. Businesses have closed. Schools have had walkouts. This has occurred in many states. Art galleries, parks, and other centers have also been closed. Side note, only because, well, this is kind of personal for me. I grew up in Miami, as you know, but I went to school in Minnesota. I love Minnesota. People in Minnesota are really good people, right? And I know those streets, and I know some of those people. And they're kind of a hearty bunch. And they're very American, you know? And in many ways, they remind me a lot of Russians. In fact, they have much of the same blood, much of the same DNA running through their veins. So do you remember at the top of the show, when we talked about interventions and interference in other countries and using a lack of democracy as an excuse to go into those countries, even though we can easily question some of the democracies in the countries that are intervening? So Tucker Carlson just said something fascinating. I don't know if you've heard this. I did because I went jogging with his podcast this weekend. And when I heard him say it, I said, wow, right? I want to share this with you. So that's why I picked this out and I want to share it with you. He's talking here about what the U.S. is actually doing or about to do with the oil in Venezuela. Take a listen.
The plan on this, and who knows how it'll work out, I don't know. But the plan is for the administration to negotiate the oil contracts and for the money to go to the administration and then to be doled out to the Treasury and then the companies. That's the stated plan. I happened to be there the other day when they were talking about it.
So is the plan to take a percentage of the Venezuelan oil and just give it to America?
Yes.
That is unprecedented.
That's the stated plan. I'm not an expert. I'm not, you know, an energy person. I'm interested, but I'm not an expert. I don't speak Spanish. Like, there's a lot of ignorance. And of course, I can't see the future. But yes, that's the stated plan. That's what Trump said to, I was having lunch with Trump and he's like, oh, come to the oil meeting. And like, I don't, you know, it's not my world. So I was like, okay. So I go up there and all these heads of the big oil companies, including Exxon, they didn't seem too enthusiastic about it, but we'll see. And I just happened to be sitting in the room totally by accident. I mean, literally by accident, because he's asked me to come. And he's like, he's telling him, he's like, no. This is for our country and you'll get a cut that I will decide.
You'll get a cut and I will decide. He's the decider. All right. Speaking of countries where people hate their government, let's talk about what's happening right now in Germany. Members of parliament there are literally begging their chancellor, right, to call Russia for the sake of the country and the people. And let me explain why this is happening. Okay. So in Germany, they used to get like 55% of their natural gas from Russia. And it came in a little pipe, so it's cheap, right? They didn't have to work too hard. And people used that that gas. They would heat their home. Merchants used it to run their businesses. So it was really good for Germany. It was a good deal, right? But since Germany cut ties with Russia, its economy has gotten, really bad. And it's gotten worse and worse every year. So here's Tino Chupraya. He is a member of parliament. And yesterday, he stood up and he told Merz over the weekend to go forward and engage with Russia, he says. He says, if you don't engage with Russia, if you don't pick up the phone and call Russia, Germany is going to continue to slide into what he calls deindustrialization.
Mr. Merz, the days of the old Federal Republic are long gone. Today, the German Chancellor must prioritize domestic interests and address issues within our own borders. As the head of the German government, take a step forward and finally call Moscow and negotiate peace and prosperity for the European continent.
You know, what's interesting is that in many ways, this is part of the story all over Europe. As the Trump administration detaches itself from a lot of these European countries, we saw that just 2 weeks ago, right? And the Trump administration, the United States, my country, the place where I'm from, begins to engage instead with Russia for economic reasons. And that's part of the reason, in many ways, that Europe is in such a bad place right now, because they really are. All right, joining me now to talk about much of this is none other than Peter Schiff. He is the chief economist and global strategist at Europac. He's also the chairman of Schiff Gold. Most of you know this because he's a pretty famous guy. But look, this guy's been around, and he's been right on so many things, especially when it comes to currency, the U.S. economy, gold, brilliant. He called it before anybody else called it. And now here he is once again. I think you saw him. He was on with my friend Tucker last week. Good interview, by the way. Signaling once again, as he did, that there's trouble ahead. There's trouble ahead regarding the U.S. Monetary policy. Mr. Schiff, what a pleasure to see you again. You look as handsome as ever.
Thank you. And, you know, by the way, the Tucker interview was almost a month before it aired. So when I did it, gold was $4,000 an ounce, and it was well over $5,000 when it finally went live. So it shows you how much prices can move in a short period of time. I mean, despite the fact that gold dropped $500 on Friday, right?
That's crazy. And you know what? There is something happening right now. There is a breaking news story as we speak. So you and I get to play news guys here. I can't think of anybody better to get a reaction from, a cold reaction like this. So Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, has just essentially doubled down on efforts to create the yuan as the global currency instead of the U.S. dollar. He basically wants to ramp up a currency swap agreement. He wants to launch, listen to this, Peter, a cross-border interbank system to replace SWIFT. He's encouraged oil trade be done in RMBs as well, which is essentially the yuan. So look, you've known this is in the works, but he just came out and said, no, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're announcing it. We're moving forward. Obviously, this is a huge story financially, or could be. And you're the perfect guy to ask. So the question is, what might this mean for our country, yours and mine, for the United States? And what could it mean for the dollar?
Well, it means everything. And, you know, it makes perfect sense that China would do this. You know, China has had plenty of reasons to do it in the past, but Biden and now Trump have given it even more reason. And not just China. There are countries all around the world that really want to divest of dollars, not just because the dollar is, you know, a flawed currency to hold, that we're going to keep printing dollars because of our massive debts. And so the holders of dollars are going to lose purchasing power the longer they hold them, but because of the political aspects, the ability of the United States to sanction whoever it wants by threatening to remove their access or take their reserves. And so, you know, we've really pushed the world to a decision that they should have made on their own, but now it's happening. But most Americans do not understand the degree to which the dollar's reserve status is basically responsible for our entire standard of living. I mean, our economy, our consumer-based credit economy, rests on a foundation of the dollar's reserve status. Without it, we couldn't have this economy. Now, in the long run, that would be a good thing. I mean, I think we have taken advantage and exploited the dollar's reserve status to live beyond our means and indulge ourselves, but ultimately, a day of reckoning was going to come. And the longer we built an economy dependent on the reserve status of the dollar, the harder it's going to be to transition back to reality when that exorbitant privilege is revoked. Because what the world has allowed Americans to do is spend a lot of money, consume a lot more than we produce, borrow a lot more than we save. So we're able to have $1 trillion a year trade deficits, multi-trillion dollar budget deficits. The reason we have this huge military force is because the dollar's reserve status has financed it. And so if we lose this, then the dollar's going to collapse. Prices in America are going to go through the roof. Consumer prices, much worse than anything we saw, you know, under Biden, just sky-high prices. Interest rates, long-term interest rates are going to soar. And the whole consumer economy is going to collapse. You know, we're going to have economy built for consumer spending, but with nothing for consumers to buy. The shelves are going to be empty because we don't make any of this stuff, and we won't be able to afford to import it after the dollar collapses.
Do you think Mr. Trump is kind of pushing this over the edge without even kind of meaning to?
Well, you know, I mean, he's poking a bear without even realizing who the bear is.
Right.
You know, Trump keeps claiming that America has all the cards because we buy everything, we consume everything. He's got it backwards. We don't have any of the cards. It's the producers that are in control. They make all the stuff. Consuming it is just the benefit that you get after you produce stuff. The Chinese and the rest of the world are perfectly capable of consuming what they produce without us. But we cannot consume what is not produced. So the Chinese win, the rest of the world wins, particularly the emerging market wins, and the U.S. loses because the ride on the global gravy train comes to an end. You know, we have to live within our means. And unfortunately, decades of outsourcing our manufacturing and hollowing out our industry have left us in a situation where we can't, you know, we're not self-sufficient anymore. The rest of the world is. All they have to do is buy what they produce, and that will happen when the dollar crashes. Because when the dollar crashes, what that does is that shifts purchasing power from America to the rest of the world. And so now products that were too expensive for the Chinese become a lot cheaper, and now they buy them. And products that were cheap in America now become very expensive, and so we don't buy them because we can't afford them anymore.
So in many ways, ever since the United States went off the gold standard and said, we don't need the gold standard, just trust us. We'll decide what everything is worth, and we'll print as much or as little as we need. And the rest of the world went along with it saying, well, you know what, it's a pretty good system. Let's go ahead and use it. Nobody's getting hurt by it. But in the last, like, decade or so, everything seems to have changed. I think, you know, by the way, do you know, and I think you mentioned this to Tucker, where it really was put on steroids was when the Ukraine war started and Europe and the United States went heavy into castigation of Russia. And Russia somehow survived that. And you tell me, maybe I don't know this business as well as you do, but I think the rest of the world may have recognized and said, oh, maybe we can do that too. Maybe we should do that because of the weaponization of the dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I criticized the Biden administration for that specific reason the minute it did that. You know, and, you know, Trump has made it worse, you know, not only with threats to invade Greenland, which he's walked back, but also more threats of sanctions. But also, I think what made a big difference was when Trump ran for election this time, there was a lot of talk about getting our fiscal house in order. You know, Elon Musk was going to come to Washington with Doge, and we were going to cut trillions of dollars out of the federal budget, and we were going to get a handle on the runaway debt. So there was some optimism that maybe, you know, this would happen. Now, I never believed that. I was telling my clients and my audience that it was all BS. And of course, I was right, because they ran Elon Musk out of town. So very little was cut. But what did happen was the big, beautiful bill, which increased government spending, reduced taxes, and widened the deficits that were inherited from Biden. So Trump made the problem worse, but more important, he let the world know that there is no hope of America ever, you know, getting a handle on this debt, because neither party wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And so the only choice is to get out. You know, that's why the world has been buying gold. That's why central banks are buying gold. They want out of the dollar. And that's why China is looking to give the world an alternative. What China should do is what we did initially, is back the RMB with gold. They should say that the RMB is better than the dollar because the dollar is backed by nothing and our currency is backed by gold. And they should do that and make it convertible. And then what they should do is they should sever the tie between the Hong Kong dollar and the U.S. dollar. And they should peg the Hong Kong dollar to the RMB and peg the RMB to gold. I mean, that's checkmate. The game is over. And, you know, China has all the production. They've got all the factories. They've got all the exports. They've got the savings. You know, they can have the reserve currency. Now, maybe they won't get the whole world, right? Maybe some countries will still hang on to the dollar for a while, but they will eat into our monopoly substantially, and that is going to be a huge problem for the United States.
It's fascinating the way you just drew that out. I think it's somewhat brilliant. We know, you know, that the Chinese have sold something like 300 billion U.S. treasuries. They've been hoarding gold. Russia has been hoarding gold for a long, long time as well. How do these big new BRICS countries, these global South countries, whatever the hell you want to call them, you know, the Brazils, the Russias, the Indias, the Chinas, the South Africas, come together and come up with something they all can agree with? And why would they trust China? Wouldn't there be a fear that China could become or do the same thing the United States did?
Well, why trust America? I mean, we're not trustworthy either, right? Yeah. I mean, we were just threatening to send our military into Greenland if they, you know, we're so, and I don't trust the U.S. government either. No, I don't trust the Chinese government. I don't trust any government.
Yeah.
But the facts speak for themselves if you just look at, you know, the situation. And most countries that trade with China have more balanced trade. All of these countries have surpluses with the United States. So China makes stuff that all these countries need. We don't, right? We just ask them to hold our IOUs and watch them depreciate. So I think trade with China is more important than trade with the United States. And so it's in the self-interest of the world. I mean, look at Canada now. We've actually driven Canada closer to China than they've ever been.
Yes.
Which I think benefits Canada. I mean, it would be easier to trade with the United States because we're right here. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, China makes a lot of things that the Canadians need, and Canada, they make a lot of stuff that we need. And so it makes sense for those nations to trade more with one another. And, you know, to the extent that Canada can wean itself off the U.S., that's Canada's gain and it's our loss. Same thing with Mexico. Same thing with South America. You know, they're building all these big ports down there so that they no longer have to ship stuff in and out of Long Beach or San Pedro, because right now a lot of Chinese merchandise arrives in the U.S. and then gets transferred on smaller ships. But they're building these large deep water ports now to bypass the United States. So we're totally cut out.
So how much of this has to do with the sanctions and the tariffs and the other castigatory measures? How much of this is just pure China saying to the rest of the world, you know, it's almost like one of those commercials that we hear on TV. You know, are you sick and tired of blah, blah, blah? Then call this number. You know, it's China saying, call this number, right?
Yeah, it's cumulative. I mean, it's all the things that we've been doing. But, you know, Donald Trump going to Davos, Switzerland, and basically chastising everybody else and acting like, you know, we're the only ones that don't have any sins to atone for. We got a lot of problems. And he claiming that the whole world only works because of America, when he's actually got it backwards. Our consumer-based, debt-fueled economy only works because the rest of the world supplies us and finances us. And, you know, when he starts threatening and saying countries should pay for the privilege of providing us with the goods that we can't produce, why? You know, well, he's going to try to tax the world, even though the tariffs fall on American consumers. It is an inconvenience for the foreign producers because now it increases the price of their goods, so they can't sell as much in America, and so they have to reroute, you know, a lot of their distribution. They have to look for alternative markets, which they are doing, but it is an inconvenience, right? But we are causing this, but we're trying to make believe that the world owes us something when it's the other way around. We borrow from the world, not the other way. In fact, our biggest creditor right now in the U.S. Treasury market is Japan. And not that many people are discussing this, but I think you're going to see major U.S. Treasury sales coming from Japan because now their own interest rates are really rising and they need to do something about their massive debt. They need to pay it down. And the only way to pay it down without creating inflation in their own country is to create inflation in our country by dumping their U.S. Treasuries and then using the proceeds to buy back the JGBs. So that helps solve their problem, but it exacerbates ours.
Yeah, that's fascinating. All right, I want to talk to you about two things. First, let's finish up on China. This Xi Jinping thing that he just announced. Do you believe that they're going to be able to pull this off? Or is it just pie in the sky?
No. I mean, it is going to happen. The only question is when. But it's happening right now in that the world is already reducing its reliance on the dollar. Gold is now the largest reserve held by central banks, more so than treasuries. So the pendulum is already moving in that direction. Maybe China wants to just give it a nudge so it moves faster, and, you know, that may be happening.
Well, then let's talk about the United States. And here's where things get really interesting. Our country, right, the United States of America, has a $38 trillion debt. That is friggin' huge, right? And it's
it's
a problem.
It's huge.
Right? Go ahead.
Right. Well, it's closer to $39 trillion than $38 trillion. But the bigger problem is that's the tip of the debt iceberg. What we don't focus on are the unfunded liabilities. So Americans are expecting Social Security checks. People who work for the government are expecting pensions. The government has guaranteed a lot of pensions, bank accounts, student loans, right? The government is on the hook for hundreds of trillions. And so these are actual liabilities that if the government were a private company, it would have to recognize them and have reserves, a contingency plan.
Right.
But the U.S. government just assumes that none of those contingent liabilities exist. So we are in debt to a much greater degree
than anybody
believes, right? Because the people who are waiting for Social Security, they think they're owed that money. Right. But the government doesn't have the trust funds, don't have the money. So it's a liability to the people, but it's not part of the national debt. The national debt just covers outstanding U.S. treasuries. That's it. You know, it doesn't cover any of the mortgage backed securities that the U.S. government guarantees. Right. Why aren't they included? Right? So it's a lie to say we only have $39 trillion in debt. We have much more than that.
So if I were a regular company, just to finish up your enthymeme here, if I were a regular company and I owed a lot of money to a lot of people and I didn't have it in my reserves, I would not be able to just make it up out of thin air and continue to pay it. But isn't that exactly what our government is doing?
Yeah. You know, if a private company reported its a balance sheet the way the U.S. government did, they'd lock them up for fraud. Right? I mean, so you can't do that. We're running a giant Ponzi scheme. You know, Bernie Madoff had that part right. You remember when they originally, charged Bernie Madoff with running his Ponzi scheme, he said, well, look, I mean, the U.S. government is running the biggest Ponzi scheme out there. And at the time, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, Bernie Madoff doesn't have any credibility. Why should we listen to him? And I was saying, well, wait a minute. He has credibility on one thing, Ponzi schemes. And he ought to know one when he sees one. That's why I thought we should have made him Secretary of the Treasury, because, you know, he had experience with Ponzi schemes and we're running the biggest one. So who better than Madoff to be Treasury Secretary?
Yeah. If you want to know how a criminal thinks, hire a criminal, right? That's why a lot of these cybersecurity guys are guys who used to be hackers and they end up working in cybersecurity firms. That's a great point. How about this? I got one for you. How about if the reason gold is rising like crazy recently, and has been, is because people in our government, maybe even the Trump administration or Mr. Trump himself, says, you know what? Let's go ahead and let gold become more powerful than the dollar, and let's revalue everything so we can cover this huge debt that we have. And I heard somebody the other day talking about this. What is her name? Caitlin Long. I heard her discussing this on a podcast, that she thinks that Bessette and these guys want to rebase the dollar on what gold used to be worth. So I guess have you heard this theory?
Well, that it used to be worth $20 an ounce.
$24.
I mean, we can't go back to that.
Yeah.
So, we don't have enough gold. Assuming we actually have the gold that we're supposed to have, you know, we don't have enough. I mean, maybe, I don't know, 40,000. I don't know where gold would have to be for it to be adequate. But it's not going to happen. We're not going to be able to repay the debt. We're going to either default on it or we're going to inflate it away. That's what gold is telling you. And, you know, Jerome Powell may deny that gold's move represents a loss of confidence in the Fed and the dollar, but that's exactly what it represents. You know, it's not an accident that this is happening when you have Fed independence in jeopardy. Not that it was ever really independent, but at least there was a pretense. And now they're trying to drop the pretense completely and allow the president to control the Fed. And so, yes, you know, people don't want dollars and they're moving to gold. In fact, I think the recent sharp decline in gold, I think that was orchestrated by the White House. I think that they were scared of what was happening. And so they coordinated this, you know, this short selling raid to coincide with a false narrative, you know, that is perpetuated by the media based probably off of talking points fed to them by the Trump administration. That Walsh is some kind of unexpected pick that is an inflation hawk that is going to be tougher than Powell, less likely to cut rates. In fact, may even come in hot and raise rates right away and, you know, and clamp down on money supply. I don't believe any of this, you know, because there's no way Trump spent the last year criticizing Powell for being too late to cut rates. And now he's going to nominate somebody that, in his opinion, would be way worse than Powell, that because he would be even tighter than Powell.
That doesn't pass the smell test. You're absolutely, absolutely right. Like, why in the hell would all of a sudden we be talking about, oh, this new guy? You thought Powell was bad. This guy's going to be even worse. What? Where did that come from? Do you believe that the U.S. government would actually do something like that to fib,
I think,
to control what should be part of a fair-based system?
Look, I think maybe Scott Bessent or, you know, Lutnick or somebody got to the president and said, you know, Donald, we got a real problem here. You know, gold and silver are screaming. The dollar's at a four-year low. It's at a record low against the Swiss franc. Yields are rising. You need to put out this fire now. We need to do something about it. And I think that's what they did. Now, the question is, how much time did they buy by, you know, floating, you know, this BS balloon and taking some of the, you know, the wind out of the precious metal sails? I think what's going to happen, too, is this is my guess. You know, I don't have any proof. But I think what's going to happen is, when Walsh gets in there and then ends up doing exactly what Trump wants and starts cutting rates, they're going to be able to say, well, you know, we had nothing to do with it. You know, he's an independent guy. He's a hawk. And if he's cutting rates, well, it must really be justified. It's obviously not political because, you know, we appointed this independent inflation hawk.
Right.
So you can trust that. And it's all bullshit. It's all part of the script.
So, but just to be on the record, you think people in the Trump administration recently tanked gold or dropped gold because it didn't tank, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and they probably profited from it. They probably put on some short positions as family members. I mean, I think insider trading is rampant in the Trump administration. So I bet a lot of his buddies made a lot of money off of that, too.
You do believe the new Fed chair will eventually drop rates?
Oh, yeah. Well, because the alternative is a financial crisis immediately. It's the economy tanks, real estate tanks, the bond market tanks, jobs tank. I mean, there is no, and the midterms are coming up this year. There's just no way that he's going to put somebody at the Fed that's going to completely obliterate the economy before the midterms to make sure that the Democrats get the House so that the first thing they do is impeach him. So, I mean, Trump's main goal is to maintain the House by the Republicans. And so he's just not going to do this. He wants rate cuts. He wants more stimulus. And so he's not going to put a guy at the Fed who's going to be an obstacle to that.
You know, it's interesting. Back in 2018, maybe the beginning of 2019, you and I had a conversation and you said, Rick, let me help you. I think given your portfolio had a couple million dollars sitting around, you need to take that and put it into gold. And I didn't listen to you because I listened to the other geniuses, the guys in. And no, this is part of my question because I think it's really interesting. If you're American and you watch CNBC or NBC or CNN or you watch some of those folks, where I come from, to be fair, you back then, it was like they wouldn't cover gold. They wouldn't talk about gold. They talked about buying gold like it being for like the crazies. If I had paid attention to you in 2018, I mean, I'm fine. I'm not complaining, but I would be a hell of a lot better off.
Well, it's not too late to listen to me. You know, I mean, you got a lot more coming, not only in gold and silver, but in the foreign stock portfolios. You know, my dividend payers strategy, which is not a gold strategy, it's dividend paying foreign stocks, was up 62% last year. That's a fantastic return. You know, you can check out information on my website at europac.com. But I think that global investing is going to outperform U.S. investing for a long time now. The U.S. was beating the world, but I think that that is over. But the reason that CNBC never really covered gold is they don't understand gold. They still don't understand gold. They were bought and paid for by the Bitcoin industry that was trying to falsely portray Bitcoin as digital gold. And so Bitcoin got all the coverage, not gold. And CNBC viewers loaded up on Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is 40% below its peak. The vast majority of the CNBC audience who bought Bitcoin over the last few years is not only losing a lot of money on Bitcoin or these Bitcoin ETFs or strategy shares, but they missed out because they could have bought gold or silver, but CNBC talked them out of it. So, I mean, they've lost a ton of money listening to CNBC, which is why nobody should listen to it. I mean, I listen to it, so you don't have to, because I tell you all the BS that they say, because they're a great contrarian indicator. Like you're having me on. They haven't had me on in a decade, right? They're not allowed to have me on because they don't want their audience knowing the truth, and their advertisers don't want their audience knowing the truth.
They do a lot of false advertising and a lot of deceptive storytelling. There's no, and about everything. I mean, if it was up to them, you'd think the world is a completely different place than what it really is. They don't even know what BRICS is. They don't cover BRICS. They don't talk about the global south. We don't understand China. And, you know, we don't have to fear these things. We just have to understand them. So, I agree with you 100%. You and I both come from the same place. By the way, since you mentioned the digital coins or crypto or whatever the heck we want to call it, is there a place in the future for both metals and digital assets? Especially
if the digital assets are tied to the metal. I was just at a conference in El Salvador. I got back yesterday. It was a Tether conference, and they were really promoting Tether Gold, which is, you know, a token that is 100% backed by gold in a vault in Switzerland. And so you can buy gold and have it digitally represented in a token that travels on a blockchain faster and cheaper than Bitcoin. So tokenized gold is much better. I mean, I'm working on something similar myself at T-Gold. You go to tgold.com and open up an account. And, you know, I've run into a lot of other people at that conference and before who are tokenizing gold. So that's what works. A marriage between blockchain and gold works. That's an alternative to the U.S. dollar. Right? Not Bitcoin, which is backed by nothing. I mean, Bitcoin is worse than the dollar. It's like jumping from the frying pan into the fire.
But you could make this argument, though, for that kind of digital assets like Bitcoin. And that is, if you really do believe, Peter, that there is that we should not allow institutions to control our money, warehouse our money, that we have to call them every time we're going to move money, et cetera, which is the way the world works right now, not just people, but even countries. The good thing I like about digital assets like Bitcoin is you don't have to do that. It's a people-to-people thing. So isn't that, if we can capture that, isn't that a good thing?
Yeah, well, but the problem is that Bitcoin itself doesn't have any value. It does, and it's not a store of value, so it really can't function as money. If a lot of people actually tried to use it, the transaction costs are prohibitively high for everyday transactions if a lot of people actually tried to adopt it as a medium of exchange. So it's just not viable. But, you know, there is a big group of people who have a vested interest in pumping up the price because they've got a lot of Bitcoin that they want to sell. And it's like another Ponzi. It's a decentralized Ponzi scheme, a pyramid, a digital blockchain. But it's really the same dynamic. The people who made money in Bitcoin are the ones that bought it a long time ago. And the reason they made money is because new people came in and bought it recently at a much higher price. Those buyers are going to be the bag holders. They've lost a lot of money. Whether they realize it or not, they're holding nothing. They're holding air. The bottom can drop out of Bitcoin on any day. And if you're stuck holding it, right, you know, and even if Bitcoin doesn't go to zero, or let's say Bitcoin actually finds some stability, maybe at 1,000 a Bitcoin. I don't know, but let's just
whatever it is. Yeah, back to 100,000.
Bought it at 100,000, or you buy it now at 75,000, whatever, 70,000, 68,000, whatever it is. If it goes to 1,000, you don't even care at that point if it goes to zero. You've already lost most of your money, 99% of your money. So what you got left, you know, is trivial. So people are just, you know, going to lose a lot of money that are getting suckered in to this mop. This pyramid, and CNBC is a major factor in helping to deceive their audience and get them to buy so their advertisers can sell.
In many ways, though, the same things that you just said about Bitcoin, you could say in many ways about, well, the dollar. I mean, talk about something on nothing.
There's a lot of similarity between Bitcoin and the dollar. There's more similarities between Bitcoin and the dollar than there is between Bitcoin and gold. But the dollar is at least legal tender, and it is used as a medium of exchange very effectively. So if I'm in America, if I want to buy stuff, I can easily pay in dollars. If I have products to sell, I can accept payment in dollars. Mm-hmm. I just don't hold on to dollars as a store of value. So dollars are used right now more as a transaction. But you don't just hold on to dollars for the long run. You get rid of them. You turn them into gold or silver or stocks or real estate. You can't really save them like you used to be able to do and put them in the bank and earn interest. You know, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Hey, finally, on offshore accounts, et cetera, other countries. Let's talk about that. China, Japan. It sounds like you're really bullish on that. If I had to choose tomorrow between an ETF based on China's emerging AI industry or Japan's emerging tech industry, Taiwan industries on chips, any of these areas, or choose an ETF out of the United States, where would you go or where would you advise people to go?
Well, we've had a pretty good run already in Japanese stocks. You know, I was pretty bullish on those and we've had a really good run. And I think that right now China's probably the better buy than Japan. But, you know, you don't have to choose between ETFs. I don't even like a lot of these stock ETFs because they own the wrong stocks and they're over-concentrated in the most expensive stocks. It's much better to hire somebody like me, Your Pacific Asset Management, and let us construct a portfolio that will most likely way outperform a static ETF. And also my mutual funds are available. We're eventually going to have later this year a ETF class of my funds because the SEC has finally allowed this. So we've filed to get it done. But in the meantime, you can buy my funds at any discount broker, Schwab or Fidelity, you know, and you can get all the information at europac.com. But I have a gold fund. I have a foreign value fund, a foreign dividend payer fund, an emerging market fund. Buy my emerging market fund. I think that's much better than just buying some Chinese ETF. I mean, we have Chinese exposure in there, but we have exposure to other countries. But it's not the country. It's the specific company that we've identified that is best positioned to, you know, do well in what's going to happen in China. So you just don't want to buy everything across the board. You want to isolate the best opportunities and concentrate on those.
How big would China, Russia, this consortium that we're seeing, like we saw on the Shanghai summit, which I covered, and I was there with Mr. Xi and Mr. Putin and them following the coverage of this, Mr. Modi. How big might these countries get if they unify and start creating these business interests, these trading partnerships, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, a lot bigger. I mean, in fact, I think China alone, their GDP will exceed the U.S. if they accomplish this, right? Because I think the Chinese currency will rise so much against the dollar that just the foreign currency alignment will automatically result in China having a larger GDP than America. You know, and that's just China. That's not talking about all the other countries.
Wow. I could talk to you all day. And I think people have been fascinated by this conversation. You are a wealth of knowledge. And you know what? I'm going to give you another call, and you'll give me another chance.
All right. It's not too late. Not too late.
It's not never...
plenty of upside left and plenty of downside to avoid by staying in the U.S. So
that's interesting.
You got to abandon ship.
You're a fascinating guy, way ahead of your time. You've been saying things that all came through, and you were calling them before it was cool to say it. So kudos.
It's
and
still not cool to say it.
I guess not. CNBC still doesn't call you. Rick Sanchez has you on the air, though, and I'm proud to do it. Peter Schiff, what a delight. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thanks, Rick.
Always a pleasure. All right, so, hey, before we go, I want to share with you what thousands of you have been writing to us about. I'm sure we're going to get thousands of things from people on this conversation that I just had. He said so many things that are newsworthy. Here's a sampling from the show we did on de-dollarization and Europe's collapse with Lionel, right? So a Goose8940 says, big fan of both of these men. Americans desperately need more analysis and commentary like this. I'm so glad you liked it. It's just a conversation like we just had. Stefan Steinberg says, thanks for the analysis. Trump is the great discombobulator who might love rhetoric, but he stinks at it. All right. At Azarius TM says, de-dollarization is as natural as changing weather and seasons. They have opened Pandora's box by using the dollar and the weapon and prohibiting countries from trading with each other. That is true and fair. James SCC, or no, James CC says, we need to refocus our assets to gold, silver, and other stable asset classes or currencies. Pardon me. Well, what a coincidence that you would be saying that when we were just done talking to Mr. Schiff. That's what he says. All right, as usual, all of the feedback is appreciated. I'm on YouTube. You can check us out at Journalistically Speaking. BitChute as well now. We're going to be putting our stuff there, so look for it. And, of course, oh, my God, on Twitter or X. I forgot the name of it for a minute. And I'm kind of one of the guys who started this back in 2010. Rick Sanchez TV is where you can find me there. Thanks so much for being with us. And by the way, thank you for letting us into your homes. We really appreciate that. And it means a lot to us. We'll be looking for you next time. Good night.